Okay, good evening everybody, and welcome to the Cabinet meeting of Monday the 15th of February 2021. I will proceed with the agenda. So item number one is to receive apologies for absence. And you can see here that everybody is present. So I'll move on to item number two, which is declarations of interest. Are there any declarations in relation to the items on the agenda for discussion this evening? No? Okay. Which moves us on to item number three, and that is to approve as a correct record the public minutes of the meeting held on the 14th of December 2020. Those minutes have been circulated. Does anybody have any questions or queries in relation to the accuracy of the minutes? In which case, I would like to propose that we accept those as a correct record. Do I have a second, please? Councillor Faulkner. All in favour? Okay, I can see all eligible voting members have voted in favour, so they will be signed as a correct record once circumstances allow. Item number four is to consider any urgent business brought forward to the meeting under Rule 12. I'm not aware of any urgent business that's been brought forward. So that takes us on to item number five, which is the forward plan. I'll pass to the Chief Executive.
Thank you, Leader. This is the forward plan from the 1st of February right the way through to the 31st of May this year. I'm happy to take any questions on the forward plan.
Thanks very much. Andy, any questions on the forward plan, please? No. Okay. Right then, takes us on to item number six, which is the scrutiny review of digital services. And the report will be presented by the relevant scrutiny chair, Councillor Philip Hudson. He'll be joined by James Abbott as the supporting officer to the scrutiny committee. So I'll just wait for Phil and James to join. Good evening, Councillor Hudson. Very warm welcome to our cabinet meeting this evening. We have reached item number six, the scrutiny review of digital services. So if you are ready, I will pass to you to present the report, please.
Yeah, good evening. I'd like to present to you the scrutiny review of digital services. Could I please thank our subgroup members who led this review, councillors Medcalf, Gould and Sankey. The committee wanted to consider the current digital services that the council offers to ensure that it provided value for money. So what are the core questions the review is seeking to answer? One, what progress has been made towards full digital services? Two, how easy and intuitive are the digital services? And three, how does the council ensure everyone has access to council services? What is the purpose of this review? Well, it's to review what services are currently available digitally, how they are implemented, and what provisions the council has to ensure that our residents and businesses have access to our services. In scope, we looked at East Staffordshire Borough Council digital services. Out of scope, we looked at digital services provided by other organisations. What is the council's vision in terms of digital service provision? A new digital strategy was approved by Cabinet in October with a vision to provide a value for money services, consider emerging technologies for digital channels to be preferred access channel, openness and transparency, in-house development and innovation. So what are our most popular online services? And if we look at table one, that shows us our top online services. On top of the 20 most popular areas of the website, users are able to perform online tasks associated with that area in 19 out of the 20 areas. And if we look at the area 19, which is council tax change of address, we understand that Capita may look at this in the future and change things. What is the council's digital solution for these services? Please see table two. What digital services could the council provide? As part of the review, a benchmarking exercise was undertaken with Staffordshire authorities to compare what digital services are available across these local authorities. If you look at the starred items, we note that the benchmarking exercise was to see what other services councils promote on their homepage and online services. Most districts and boroughs offer similar services online. Some had a few things different to ESBC, such as May account tab and event calendars. Some of the tabs used by other councils we have used in the past but found that they did not work for us. So how do the council promote its digital services? The council uses many platforms to promote its services, such as social media, Facebook, Twitter, search engines such as Google and Yahoo, and the ESBC website and advertisements. So what is the progress regarding democratic enablement? Electoral services receive a free allowance of £25,000, which updates every financial year. The Electoral Services Department has begun using the gov.uk notify service. And the council records committee meetings and posts the recordings online as a result of COVID-19. Intuitiveness of digital services. Our services are available across multiple platforms and can be accessed from PCs, laptops, tablets and mobile phones. The council's website is responsive, so it adapts to different screen sizes without the need for a separate mobile website. Does the council use plain English where appropriate in describing its services? Out of the top 1,500 pages on the council's website, the majority of pages have a reading age between 11 and 13. As part of an ongoing quality assurance work, the reading ages of our pages are reviewed, and those pages that have a high reading age are identified and assessed. On research in the top three search engines, each Staffordshire appears either top or within the top three. Access to council services. How does the council ensure that all residents can access the council's digital services? The council corporate website aims to adhere to the web content accessibility guidelines. This covers a range of topics, including colour, contrast, code, quality and keyboard accessibility. In addition to conforming to the industry website accessibility guidelines where possible, the council also has a website accessibility toolbar. Are those unable to transact with the council digitally still able to access council services? The council provides access to all services for those unable to transact with the council digitally, and all departments can be contacted via telephone, postal services that can also provide support help with digital services. Conclusions. Following this review, we feel that overall substantial progress has been made towards full digital services, with the most popular services having a digital option, which some services may not be suitable for fully digital services, where, for instance, the solution is a complex or requires specialist knowledge. Most core services have a digital option. Every effort appears to have been made to make them as straightforward as possible to use, although to some extent this is limited by the complexity of some subjects. All services have at least one alternative channel for residents to use, such as telephone, mail and the customer contact centre. Therefore, overall, we feel the digital services are good and fit for purpose. The recommendations detailed below reflect this statement and lead us to suggest that the next stages are for the council to continue to look at developing things further and add additional value to its current provision through effective delivery of the new digital strategy. This could be done by enhancing its technology and reviewing its processes to ensure they are streamlined to deliver the best outcomes intended, considering the new or innovative use of internal solutions, use of any emerging external technology where appropriate, or working closely with our partners to drive improvements. We note that the benchmarking undertaken in this report indicates that other authorities have an account function, and we support the assessment of this function's feasibility for the borough as set out in the digital strategy. Given the importance of the delivery of the digital strategy in developing the council's digital provision, we will welcome an ongoing role for the scrutiny committee in reviewing its progress. Recommendations of the committee. Good progress has been made on developing a digital service on which the officers are to be congratulated. Substantial progress has been made on most of the remaining work. However, further progress is needed in areas such as connecting systems to enable a one-account solution, particular areas such as planning, where the application search takes a bit of getting used to, and improvements to document handling. These are known issues and appear to be in hand either currently or the forthcoming delivery of the new digital strategy. Most solutions appear to be produced in-house, and this can have significant benefits in terms of cost and exact tailoring to ESBC requirements. However, different packages and commercial options are available. Consideration should be given to alternative packages, as it is quite possible that this will increase the range of options and may offer solutions that have not been considered. Perhaps the most significant and ambitious of which is the aim of introducing a single account for users across all council services, My Account, and is offered by several other councils. This is an ambitious objective, and as most residents do not interact with a council on a regular basis, would reduce the number of accounts details to remember. We would suggest some thought be given to the possibility of some kind of shared access to county services, so that for a functional aspect, customers have one port of call and one set of details to remember. We accept this might prove to be infeasible. It is recommended that the scrutiny committee be kept informed of the progress of the new digital strategy throughout the lifetime of the strategy. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much indeed. Councillor Hudson for that. Can I just note at this juncture, so the review itself was commenced at a time when Councillor Metcalfe was part of the scrutiny committee. He's obviously joined us now as a cabinet support member. So just for the sake of good order, I feel we should just note that in terms of the minutes of tonight's meeting. Are there any questions for Councillor Hudson? Got a couple or one which I can roll into two. Are there any other questions? Okay. I think I'll start, Councillor Hudson, by echoing your thanks to the councillors on the subgroup. I guess just for a point of summary and a point of clarity, and I think the report broadly says this, but just for my benefit, I think the overall feeling and outcome is that our current services are on a par with other local authorities, given the evidence from the benchmarking undertaken, and also that in terms of the things being recommended as part of the report, that most of those, or indeed I think you could probably argue that all of those are being picked up by the existing work around the digital strategy. So I guess my kind of question is if we accept all the recommendations of the committee as falling into and to be dealt with by the digital strategy, do you feel that would cover off the recommendations?
Yes, I do, yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions or contributions on that? Okay, in which case I would like to recommend that we as cabinet accept the recommendations as set out in section 2 of the report this evening. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Allen. Okay, thank you. All those in favour? Okay, and that is all eligible voting members voting in favour. So those recommendations are carried. Thank you very much. Councillor Hudson, thank you very much for your time this evening. And again, if you please pass on our thanks to the subgroup members for all their hard work on this, and also thanks to James in terms of his support on the report and to the committee. Thank you very much indeed, and we shall we'll let you go.
Yeah, thank you, and good evening, everybody.
That moves us on to item number 7, which is the scrutiny review of sports development and leisure services provision. So we are going to be joined by Councillor Lamb to present the report. We're also going to be joined by Councillor Clark as chairman of the relevant scrutiny committee, and also by Dan Arnold as the support officer to the scrutiny committee. Just make sure we're all here. We are. Okay, good evening, councillors Lamb and Clark. Very warm welcome to our meeting this evening. We are on item number 7, so I understand, Councillor Lamb, you're proposing to present the report, so if that's okay, I will pass to you.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Well, first thing I'm going to say, the subgroup was formed of councillors Metcalfe, Shrive, and Killoran. We initially raised the subject to look at it because we were conscious that the leisure machines contract, the leisure contract had just been allocated out, and we understand it, trying to understand the implications of that on some of our sports development going forward. So our three core questions were, you know, what is the council doing to promote health and well-being? What can we learn from everyone active in relation to sports engagement? And what are the facilities available across the borough? And we were trying to really understand what are those facilities across the borough and identify any scopes for improvement and how greater community involvement could be achieved. And then to look at what the implications of that for going forward. So for doing that, we did several interviews, and we started off with a discussion with James Abbott, who gave us a little bit more information about the contract so we can understand that a little bit better. I'd also talk to us about the staff's network signposting project, which is trying to identify various functions that are out there and health facilities that can be pointed to for people to get involved with. We had a session with the Sports Council, and they were very clear to us there's been quite a big shift in terms of these staffs, as it's gone from lots of companies that put on their own sports and social clubs and provided a lot of facilities from that, and also potentially for teams, football teams, cricket teams. And with the death of those, a lot of those clubs and the industry's not supporting those clubs anymore, there's been a drop in those areas. But obviously, conversely, there's been quite a lot of changes with gyms spreading up and more people getting access to gyms and taking part in classes and things like that. And then we also had a session with the Burton Community Trust. And I think that was very interesting in terms of how they're reaching to across different levels of the community, from youngsters, difficult communities to engage with, up to people with dementia, cancer patients. They're obviously doing a tremendous job in terms of getting access and making some health improvements in those areas. The problem, obviously, to some extent, is that they're very dependent on any funding they can get. And it just depends if they can get the sources of funding, if they can actually bring those services forward. The stage after we'd spoken to them, we were then obviously thrown into COVID. And that's obviously changed things very, very much for everybody. And certainly for the community trust themselves, and it's obviously affected what they're able to provide and what funding streams they can get access to. Obviously, because of COVID, that has also completely changed things in the sense that I think perhaps people understand much greater the need for maintaining health and fitness. And there's obviously been a lot of people getting out, exercising, walking, running, cycling. So there's been a growth of people doing their own thing in terms of that, getting fit and those sort of things. And obviously, you know, the government understands this is a problem and needs to tackle obesity and things like that. And therefore, I think it's very much a fundamental area for the council to consider in terms of how we can develop sport and move forward. We then managed to have a session with everyone active once they were accessible again because of the furlough situation. And obviously, they do have that opportunity to tap into a much wider knowledge base of potentially of how services can be developed and what things might work very well in different areas. I think the problem has obviously been, not through their fault, is that obviously with the COVID and the centres being closed down, then they've not been able to move forward as much as many of the things they clearly would have liked to have done if they've had the opportunity. So I think there's certainly the opportunity there to tap into some of the things they've been doing around the rest of the country and to try and bring more of those things forward into East Staffordshire. So I think in summing up, what we said was we identified a number of recommendations. A lot of these are building on things that have already started or is being thought about, and we think that they need to be fully supported by the council. Some of these, obviously, the council have been very involved in, like trying to look at starting the Toxic to Park Run, with East Staffordshire not having any park runs, although a lot of local runners will go and take part in park runs at Rosyston or Markeaton or Concord, surrounding areas. There's not been one in East Staffordshire. So I think that's going to be very positive when we can get park runs come back and potentially with Toxic to Park Run. And then things like stronger town funds, I think with some of the options there in terms of looking at the canal pathways and trying to improve those, again, that much better for people to walk, run or cycle down the canals. Everyone active were looking at community health hubs potentially in their centres, and I think that's another area that we should be fairly supportive of. And we should also be supporting the Together Active one-stop portal. And also we want to make sure, obviously, we continue to promote the free outdoor facilities and associated health benefits that people can get from our parks and that sort of thing. So I think there's lots of tactical things there, which I think are things that are happening, but we need to make sure that we're fully supporting them as council. But then I think we do need this overall coordinated strategy. Obviously, it's very important, I think, to get for people to maintain their health. And certainly at this time when we've got something like COVID, and obviously we can't be sure how long this is going to go on for, and it's obviously something that's been hanging around for a long time. So if we can, as a council, get an overwhelming strategy, and then when potentially money streams do become available, we can tap into those to then support the programmes that will benefit our residents. That's it, thanks.
Thank you very much indeed for that, Councillor Lamb. And Adam, do you want to?
Yep. I'd just quickly like to put on record my thanks to Councillor Lamb for leading the scrutiny, as well as Councillor Metcalfe for his time when he was on the scrutiny committee, for his involvement in the report, as well as Councillor Shriver and Councillor Cloran. And the only part that I'd like to add to the report as well is that initially when this sports development review was set out, it was in the months prior to the pandemic, and that COVID-19 very much happened during the report and not only made the report itself quite challenging, again, for which I thank the councillors and Daniel for kind of getting through that, but also in a way changed the dynamic of the report. I think the recommendations in there now more than ever are probably quite prominent for the council. And I know there was a lot of media coverage over the weekend around sports and how we can get people going out active. And I say this as somebody who's probably sitting in a suit now that's a bit snugger post-pandemic than it was at the start of it. But I think there's lots of good activities and good clubs and good venues across East Staffordshire. And I think how we can, as a council, can bring those all together and further develop sports across the county, get everybody active and maintain that and try and fight off some of the negatives of the pandemic in terms of mental health and people putting on weight and whatnot during that. I think now is an apt time as any to start considering that. So that's all I'd like to add to the record. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Clark. And I can attest to you that my suit is definitely tighter, despite my despite being 6 weeks into the couch to 10K running app, doesn't seem to be working its way through to my suit yet, but I'm sure it will. Actually, Councillor, you've sort of answered the question that I was going to ask, and that was around the kind of shift in the shift in methodology over the course of the scrutiny review, and really, I suppose, do you feel that the existing arrangements with everyone active have really had a chance to sort of work their way through to positive results in terms of what's currently happened or the activity that's currently been going on, or is there some time to sort of wait a little bit to see how those develop in just, I'm just thinking in terms of the broader strategy piece. So that was really my question for either of you.
I think obviously, well, I think it's obviously been very difficult for everyone active in terms of where we've been and the pressure they've been under. And obviously it's also been compounded by the fact that some of the sports development people were furloughed a lot longer than some of the other staff. So I'm sure that they can obviously help in that direction, but to some extent I think it does need more of a council direction in terms of what we're looking at and what we think is the right thing. And again, you know, today, like there's a big bit in the Burton Mail today about, you know, cycle paths and things like that being pushed by the county council. And you do sort of think that those are the sort of things we should be, you know, very much driving as a requirement from at least staff's viewpoint. And I think therefore everyone active, I think, would be very supportive of the things we want to do. But I think it does need to be more of a council led direction than a everyone active direction.
Andy.
Thank you, Leader. Yeah, really just to pick up on Councillor Lamb's previous comments about the cycling strategy, which is something that has been led by the County Council, but which officers have inputted into over the course of about a year or so now. So I'd like to think that the Borough Council has played a role in modelling that strategy and its impact on East Staffordshire.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. So there was a couple of things that in terms of the recommendations, obviously the canal pathway work at the moment is subject to our Stronger Thames Fund bid into government. So is currently being considered by the government. And likewise, some investment into the local cycle network and cycle strategy. So there are a couple of elements of good and positive stuff that will hopefully flow from the Stronger Towns Fund work. It's been referenced a couple of times already, but as we did for the previous item, if we could also please minute that Councillor Metcalfe was part of the review committee prior to his joining as a cabinet support member, please. Okay, are there any other questions or queries? Councillor Faulkner.
Thank you, Leader. Just a comment, really, that having read the report brings back to me some of the benefits of living in East Staffordshire that you forget if they're not in front of you. And certainly there are lots of opportunities to keep active and get fit that I should be looking to actually take up when COVID and lockdown starts easing that I never did before. So thank you to the guys and the committee for opening my eyes up again.
Thank you. Okay. So I think on the basis of that I'm assuming in any absence of anything to the contrary, that we are comfortable with the recommendations. As I say, I think I just caveat 13.1, obviously, in terms of its linkage to the, I'm not saying we do that formally, but just note, obviously, its linkage to the Stringer Towns work. And then likewise on the strategy, taking on Councillor Lamb's point, I think in terms of our work on updating our existing strategy or bringing in a strategy, I think we can look to do that later on in the corporate cycle. Hopefully once everyone active are back up and running, we can look at how to deliver the strategy through EA as well, along with the support of EA. Okay, so I will propose that we accept the recommendations as outlined in section 13 of the report. Do I have a seconder for that? Councillor Peters. And all those in favour? Okay, that's all eligible voting members in favour. Thank you very much. So thank you very much, Councillor Lamb, and I'm sorry, I should have also extended my thanks to Councillor Shrive and Councillor Cron, and indeed Councillor Lacoste, for their work on the report as well. So thank you very much. It's really helpful to have this at this stage that we can build into strategy and plans going forward. So thank you very much for your contribution, and thank you very much for your attendance this evening. And thanks, Dan, for the support to the committee.
Thank you. Good evening, all.
Good evening, all. Thank you. Right, that takes us on to item number 8, which is the medium-term financial strategy 21-22 to 23-24. And I'll just bring Lisa in. Good evening, Lisa.
Good evening.
We are on item number 8, so I'll pass to you for a presentation, if I may.
Thank you very much, Leader. I've got a presentation which I will share. If you just bear with me for a second. Okay, so this is the medium-term financial strategy for the period 2021-22 through to 2023. 24. And the purpose of the report is to consider the MTFS for that period and to highlight the financial challenges and risks for 21-22 and beyond. And in terms of the background, the MTFS really is set against the backdrop of significant challenges. As members will be aware, since austerity began, ESBC has seen a 78% or 6.4 million reduction in core central funding on a like-for-like basis for the period between 2010 and 2019. At the start of this budget setting cycle, the base budget for next year required savings to be identified of 0.7 million. And this was balanced on a temporary basis from the new homes bonus reserve. Large-scale reforms to local government finance were due to come into effect from April 2021, including the Fair Funding Review, a New Homes Bonus Review, a business rates reset, and also a move to 75% of business rates being retained locally. However, these have once again been deferred. And this results in significant uncertainty in terms of the level of resources beyond 21-22. In addition to this uncertainty, there is a high degree of uncertainty as well in relation to the impact of the pandemic on our financial position. The provisional settlement was announced in December 2020, and more recently has been finalised. The main settlement funding assessment from central government means our funding allocation has been frozen at 3.2 million. Although there is a small increase in the business rates multiplier compensation grant of around £38,000. One of the other key core sources of government funding is new homes bonus grant. And again, a reduction in this regard of £1 million from the 2.45 million received in the current financial year to just 1.44 for next year. And the removal of the legacy payments attached to the current new homes bonus scheme equates to a cumulative loss for the council of £4 million. Core spending power, which is the government's analysis of local authority funding, has been frozen for ESBC next year, compared with an average national increase within England for all local authorities of 4.5%. There are various packages of financial support in relation to COVID-19 from central government. However, at this present time, this funding does not cover all our estimated losses for next financial year. In terms of council tax referendum principles, they remain the same for district councils such as ourselves at 2% or £5, whichever is higher, with social care authorities able to increase by an additional 3%. The graph on screen, taken from section 5 of the report in relation to the government settlement, highlights the change in core spending power by class of authority between 2021-22. And this shows, as I've already mentioned, that the average national increase in England is 4.5%. For shire districts such as ourselves, the average increase is just 1.2%. However, for East Staffordshire, that has been frozen at 0%. Now, the key underlying principles that lead to these differences are the increase in council tax that social care authorities are able to buy, so the extra 3%, but equally funding towards the new homes bonus scheme, which principally benefits district councils, has reduced quite significantly, and that's why you're seeing that such a wide gap in core spending power changes. And secondly, the graph, just to emphasise the change in new homes bonus grant support, demonstrating there that the loss of income of £1 million for next financial year and expectations in relation to the current scheme that there'll be a further loss of around £1 million by 2022-23. Now, the government are consulting on a new reformed new homes bonus grant scheme to come into effect from 2022-23 onwards. So what does this mean in terms of our MTFS position? Well, what you can see on screen is a summary of the proposed budget, which is taken from paragraph 8.1 of the report. And this demonstrates that the budget has been balanced across all 3 years. And that's been balanced from a combination of windfall resources and reserves. Due to the high degree of uncertainty, particularly around the impact of COVID-19, the budget has been based on a central or mid-case assumptions. However, if we were to apply alternative assumptions, more optimistic or pessimistic, the outcome of these is shown on the right-hand side of the screen. So for 21-22, the budget has been balanced, utilising windfall business rate resources of just over £1 million. If we were to apply more optimistic assumptions, we would have a small surplus of around £56,000. However, more pessimistic assumptions would lead to a shortfall of around 1.8 million, which would need to be bridged using windfall resources. This assumes council tax increases of £5 from 21-22 onwards, which is the equivalent of 50 pence a month based on 10 instalments. Other key budget assumptions are outlined in section 10 of the report. And of course, beyond 21-22, this is very much subject to the proposals around local government reforms and ongoing uncertainties around COVID-19 impact. Some of the key changes that have been built into the budget in terms of spending pressures and growth are set out in paragraph 9.3 and amount to just below £3 million. And the most significant of these relates to contingency for COVID-19 related income and expenditure pressures, but also some growth to support regeneration proposals and climate change plans. And then in addition to which, additional savings and income or funding is set out at paragraph 9.6 of the report, the table there. This next slide demonstrates how the budget has been balanced over the 3-year period, highlighting for 21-22 the drawdown of the windfall business rates growth, and then for 22-23 utilisation of the new homes bonus reserve, and then for the final year, year three, dipping into the contingency reserve. Now, the council does have a very effective track record of delivering savings to balance the budget. Obviously, a decade of funding reductions has meant a number of savings have needed to be delivered. And some of the key areas where savings have been achieved, office accommodation reviews, the cultural services review, alongside various management restructures, and internal shared services. The future strategy is outlined at paragraph 8.4, and paragraph 8.5 demonstrates that effective track record in terms of delivering savings, with East Staffordshire Council savings exceeding the average of both comparable English authorities and also our nearest neighbour authorities. In relation to the capital programme, this includes a varied programme, including the replacement of our fleet of vehicles following a recent procurement exercise, which is detailed later on the agenda. The ongoing commitment in regard to debt repayment to reduce the burden on the revenue budget. Disabled facility grants being externally funded. A number of departmental bids, including some ICT equipment and also infrastructure to support the implementation of green vehicles. It also includes provision for additional cemetery space, and there will be an ongoing focus in terms of the Burton Stronger Towns Fund and also the Utoxeter Master Plan. And then finally, the policy set out in the MTFS is to set aside 20% of future capital receipts in order to reduce the overall level of debt and generate savings to the revenue budget. Section 12 of the report extensively details risks attached to the MTFS, as well as areas in terms of mitigation. The key risks are shown on screen, so national funding decisions, including the impact of the proposed reforms, the impact of COVID-19 and Brexit, including the wider impact on the economy and the consequential knock-on effect of that. The business rates retention scheme Members will be aware that that's been highlighted for a number of years now as a key area of risk. And of course, that's even more so now with the impact of COVID-19. The risk around our income estimates that not being achieved, the council has varied income streams and some very significant, and therefore whilst our estimates are prudent, there is a degree of volatility. And then finally, in terms of the key risks around waste management and recycling, both ongoing pressures plus contracts that are due for renewal and proposed national changes. But as I mentioned, there is more detail set out and outlined in section 12 of the report. In terms of reserves, the MTFS sets out that the minimum working balance is to remain at 1.3 million. And Appendix B to the report sets out a forecast of earmarked reserves, continuation of the policy to only use reserves for one-off purposes. And a positive statement is set out within the report from the Chief Finance Officer over the level of reserves, noting that the use of reserves to balance the budget is only a short-term solution and that savings will need to be identified in the medium term. And then finally, the setting aside of £150,000 for capital feasibility, regeneration or spend to save initiatives, with some additional governance in terms of approvals of that funding. So finally, the medium-term financial strategy highlights a number of significant risks and acknowledges the degree of uncertainty that exists, both in relation to the impact of the COVID-19, but also the potential impact of central funding decisions, which cannot be underestimated. Subject to the assumptions made and the risks highlighted, this is a robust basis for managing the council's finances over the period. Looking ahead, 22-23 and beyond, the scale of savings in order to reduce the reliance on reserves is a significant challenge for the authority, and members and officers will need to continue to identify more effective ways of service delivery in order to ensure that the council's financial sustainability in the medium to long term. And the recommendation is that Cabinet is asked to recommend to Council the approval of the medium-term financial strategy for 2021-22 to 23-24, which includes the revenue budget, capital programme, rolling forward of the Council Tax Support Scheme for 21-22, and the asset management and capital strategy, and that the level and appropriateness of reserves be noted. On that note, I'll stop the presentation and pass back to you, Leader.
Lisa, thank you very much for that. Are there any questions or comments from any of you? Councillor Faulkner.
The comment I'd like to make, Leader, is that we have spent a considerable amount of time discussing the MTFS, both in Leader, Deputy Leader conversations and also in group conversations, and I am content with how it is at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Faulkner. Yes, I'm going to just probably pick up on that. Obviously, this is heading toward the culmination of a long period of work in putting this together, and I'd like to take the opportunity to thank Lisa, Sal, and the whole team for all their hard work in what have been obviously extremely challenging circumstances, more so than ever before, I think. So I'd just like to extend my thanks to you and the team for all the hard work that's gone into it thus far. So I think in terms of our purpose here tonight, we're here to recommend that this goes forward to full council, at which point obviously it's going to be open for scrutiny and debate as appropriate. So building on that, I would like to propose the recommendation as set out in section 20.1 of the report. May I have a second of that, please? Councillor Faulkner. Okay, and all in favour? Okay, and I can see that all voting members are in favour, and so that recommendation is passed. Thank you very much, and thank you very much, Lisa.
Thank you, Leader. Good evening.
Good evening. Okay, which takes us on to item number 9, which is the COVID-19 Emergency Planning Update Report for February 2021. And I'll pass it to you, James.
Thanks, Leader. So this is the latest in a sequence of reports that pulls together a range of information on the response and recovery elements relating to the latest position within the county on the COVID-19 pandemic, of course, focusing on the Borough of East Staffordshire. As ever, the situation is ongoing and constantly changing, but I intend to just take a brief run through the report as written to highlight the key points for you all. But as always, there's a summary of all the details shown in the table that you can see on page 6 of the report that just draws everything together across the four themes that we're continuing to use to categorise and focus our review. So if we run through these themes quickly, starting with community and partners, so that's section 515 of your report. The document now shows the current position in terms of restrictions and guidance and reflects Staffordshire's move into Tier 4, which was shortly before the new year, and then the subsequent move into the national lockdown shortly after the new year. Of course, County and Borough Council colleagues have continued to review things from a local outbreak perspective on an ongoing basis, along with our partners, identify any hotspots to aid our response. So, for example, areas have been advised to take extra care to reduce transmissions through relevant targeted communications. It's worth mentioning that the County Council have been offering asymptomatic testing to everyone in the county, especially targeting those who need to be out and about during this period of lockdown. And our NHS partners are, of course, rolling out the programme of vaccinations across Stoke and Staffordshire. And we continue to support our partners on vaccinations and testing where we can. There's also an example in this section of our environmental health teams working, responding to businesses where there's been a breach of COVID-19 business closure regulations. So moving on to service changes and communications, so that's section 516. There's a reminder of the facilities that have had some level of closure as a result of the restrictions, but in particular with updates there in the operations at the Market Hall, Leisure Centres, Horticultural Centre, and those few outdoor facilities which are listed in the table that you can see on page 8 as a result of the Tier 4 and subsequent lockdown position. And of course, there continues to be a wide range of key messages being communicated across the borough, which of course is an important part of our response work. On people and processes, which is section 517, we've got the ongoing updates on COVID-related absence levels from within the organisation, and a new item added on page 9 relating to the licensing committee approving an extension to private hire and Hackney carriage vehicle licences. So the fourth theme, the final theme, is finances. So that's section 518. We have the latest position with the grants and the reliefs that have been administered by the authority, with some additional information detail now included on the local restriction support grants and detail on all the latest numbers and figures relating to each of those grants. There's also mentioned now to the council submitting an application recently to the National Leisure Recovery Fund for a government grant to support the council's leisure provision, but we await the outcome of that. In addition to the response side of things, the report also details our local recovery framework, looking at the various recovery activities. So there's a lot of information detailed throughout the tables that you can see on pages 14 through to 27 of the report. But as you can see, there's a lot of good work ongoing in terms of recovery opportunities. So that's a quick summary of the report. As I've mentioned, the position continues to change and evolve, and I hope the report provides an overview of the spectrum of work that continues in the area. The recommendation is simply to note the update that's been provided in the report. And with that, I'll hand over to you, Leader, but of course happy to take any questions.
James, thank you very much, as ever, for the presentation and for the work that has gone into the report. Are there any questions or comments on new report. Okay. I think it gives us all a broad level of assurance, and indeed gives all our residents a broad level of assurance about the level of work and activity that is currently going on, both within the council but also across the area in terms of dealing with the pandemic. And obviously we are working very closely with all of our partners to help suppress the spread, which the infection rate is obviously a little bit higher than some of our neighbouring authorities, but it's continuing to decline in the recent days, and we're hoping that position will continue as a pattern, and obviously we'll continue to work hard with all our partners, the county, the police, and community leaders to ensure that remains the case. And I just encourage anybody, as James has mentioned, so anybody who is out and about under the restrictions, please make getting an asymptomatic cultural flow test part of your daily routine. If you're out and about, please do book a test and help stop the spread. Okay, if there are no other questions, our members content that we note the date in the report? Yes. Okay, lovely, thank you very much. And James, thank you very much indeed for that. Okay, right, that takes us on to item number 10, and so I'll move that in accordance with section 184 of the Local Government Act 1972, that the press and public be excluded from the remainder of the meeting, as it's likely in view of the nature of business to be transacted or the nature of the proceedings that there would be disclosed exempt information as defined in the paragraph 1 of Schedule 12A of the Act, indicated in brackets, and all the item numbers on the agenda. So that is the private minute